and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everybody's having a blessed day today. And first off, I want to apologize for the show yesterday. It was absolutely horrible, to be honest with you. We had power outages all over the place, bad connections. Stuff was not prepared and ready like it should have been. And then we had a power outage down here in Florida twice. And it was just a mess. So I want to apologize about that in advance. That's why the show is not on the archives right now. It was just too chopped up and too bad to even post. But today we got everything rolling. It looks like our electrical company actually got their head out of the sand, and they're producing electricity like we pay them to do every single month. And so we got some stuff going here. Got a lot of articles ready for you guys now. And yeah, we're ready to go. So how are you doing today, Deb?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely great. In fact, we have a backup generator at the office just to prevent stuff like this, and it failed. And so there's a Generac system, and we're trying to get a doggone dealer to come out here. It was installed many years ago, probably, 15 years ago, and it's worked great. Yesterday was the first time it really completely failed. Now we can't get anybody to come out and inspect it or figure out what's wrong with it because they didn't do the installation, and the guy who did the installation is no longer in business, and even Generac's kind of crawfishing on sending somebody out. So it's been one of those things. If any of you guys know any Generac corporate executives, give them a call for me. Let them know that we've got an issue and we're slamming their product on radio because it's broken. But real quick, I want to share something with you guys very quickly. This morning, I had an email come in from a friend of mine out of Texas, and he's got a daughter or his girl or somebody. I'm not sure if the girl meant it was his daughter or his girlfriend. I'm not sure. And basically, she's got a bunch of problems with debt, a lot of problems. In fact, she's got a bunch of credit cards that she's trying to consolidate. She's going to a debt consolidation service. Now, I want to talk to you about that for just a second. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, nor am I giving you any financial advice. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying is I'm going to discuss some alternatives with you and the pros and the cons of all of this stuff, because I know a lot about marketing and finance and business and management and cash flow and beacon scores and all that kind of stuff. And I've helped a lot of people by giving them advice that I'm going to give you right now to get out of debt. Sometimes we have things that happen to us. We end up making bad choices when we were young. We get one credit card, it maxes. We get another credit card, it maxes. We get another credit card, it maxes, and so forth and so on, until sometimes you may have a dozen, two dozen, three dozen credit cards or some type of amount of money, a credit left on them, or no amount of credit left on them, and now you're having a hard time making the minimum payments. Or you have a job situation in which you get fired and you can't make the payments on the credit cards. Or you have a medical condition that happens, or you have a spouse that loses their job and the spouse can't work anymore, and you get into a situation where you've gotten yourself into a debt mess. Now, I'm going to give you some personal stuff about my family today, involving my wife and my mother-in-law and what I helped them to do. Plus, I have helped literally dozens of people get out of debt by doing what I'm about to tell you to do in the past 34 years. Now, here's the thing. You've got to look at your own cash flow, and you've got to figure out if you're making minimum payments on a credit card. Let's say, for instance, you make $50,000 a year, and your credit, and after taxes, you bring home $35,000, let's say $30,000 a year. And let's say you have $30,000 a year of discretionary income that you and your spouse has, or whatever, or just you if you're single. And now all of a sudden you've got payments that are about $1,500 a month for your credit cards, and those are your minimum payments to make. Let's say you're carrying probably $1,500 a month in payments. You're probably making, most of that's going to be interest, so you're probably close to $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in debt on credit cards, and you're making minimum payments every month. Here's the problem with that. If you look at it from an actual actuarial table or a chart showing how long it's going to take to pay that off, it's going to take you an extended period of time, if not years, if not decades. That's if you're having to pay the current interest. If you don't pay them and you go to a debt consolidation thing, or you get a debt consolidation loan, so you have a bunch of loans that you now roll into one big impossible to pay loan, then what ends up happening is it crashes out your beacon score anyhow if you go to one of the debt consolidation services. In other words, let's say you have a 700 beacon score and you go to a debt consolidation. You may drop down to 500 or 450 because you've gone to the same debt consolidation, because they figure the next step is bankruptcy. That's why they drop your beacon score like that. Even though you're doing your best to try to pay this loan off, they basically don't want to do that because they, first of all, the credit card companies want to keep you as a debt slave. That's number one. This is Rothschild money. They want to bring you in and keep you making 18-24% payments for the rest of your life. Let me give you an example with Austin. Years and years ago, he had a motorcycle that got stolen when he was 18. that motorcycle basically, they went into collections with the motorcycle, and the guy with the motorcycle told us, he said, if you don't pay the payments or start making the payments, by this time it had already gone up $4,000 or $5,000 just a few months, then what we're going to do is we're going to wait for 7 years, and then we're going to basically file a garnishment against your wages, and by that time the payments will be over $100,000, and you'll basically be paying this off the rest of your life. This is the goal. This is what they do. These are usurers. That's what they are. This is why the Bible forbids this type of behavior. The Bible forbids them to do what they do, but they do it anyhow because they don't care. Now, what's interesting about this is, if you're going to dump your Beacon score and you're going to dump your credit anyhow by getting a debt consolidation loan, then it probably would be something that you need to consider filing bankruptcy. Now, let me explain to you why I say that. The Bible calls these things the year of Jubilee, and every so many years you can actually have a, you know, relief of debt. And the reason the Bible does that is that it didn't want the children of Israel, people in the Old Testament, to be caught into a debt servitude. They didn't want to become an indentured servant for the rest of their lives, which is what they're trying to do to you. That's what the credit cards are all about. It's about indentured servitude. And they start you. I remember when I was in college, Austin, I didn't have any credit cards. And all of a sudden I started getting all these credit cards for companies, you know, it was Standard Oil, it was Citgo Oil, it was all these different gas cards. I was getting, all of a sudden I had like a dozen gas cards. I had no income. I mean, I was on my dad's, that was paying me money every year to go to school, and yet they were giving me all these credit cards without any credit checks, getting me wrapped up into the credit card mindset. And so what ends up happening is you get into a situation where, you know, you don't really think about it. But I always made sure every month I'd pay them off because I didn't like the interest payments. So that's how I structured them to start with. When I first met Sharon 34 years ago and I started dating her, she had been married before, I told you guys that. And she ended up, her ex-husband ran up a bunch of bills in both their names and basically filed bankruptcy and left her with all of this debt. And I looked at her and I said, look, this is nuts. I said, why am I going to get stuck paying off your ex-husband's bills? I said, this is stupid. I said, we need to consider this. So what we did is we contacted all the creditors and we said, look, here's what we want to do. We want to go ahead and pay off Sharon's portion that she personally signed for that are her bills and not her ex-husband's bills. And they basically rewarded us by sending multiple sheriffs to the house now that they had her address, so, you know, to my office, because, you know, she had a separate location when we were married. We were not yet married. She was living in a separate location, but they had an address to serve her. And all of a sudden, as soon as they knew what she was doing, and we wanted to get just pay off the debt that she owed from what she personally signed for, they sued her. They immediately started. I contacted them back and I said, look guys, this isn't cool. You know, she said, well, we don't care. We want our money. And it doesn't matter if she signed it or her husband signed it. We don't care. We want our money. She's on the note. Then I began to realize that these guys don't want to play fair. So I had Sharon, before we got married, file bankruptcy. Now, I want to share that with you guys. That's a very personal thing. This is 34 years ago. Her credit was already trashed out, but her Beacon score didn't matter because, you know, I could do credit with my own Beacon score. And I did that for her because it was something that I knew that would serve her better than she trying to pay off these bills, or me trying to pay off her ex-husband bills. I was unwilling to do it. It was a substantial amount of money. If it had been a few thousand dollars, I probably would have gone ahead and done it, but it wasn't. And so what ended up happening is, you know, we basically have rebuilt her credit, was rebuilt within a couple of years. And what you can do now is even easier. You can go to like one of the, a lot of them have, there are a lot of credit cards out there where you pay them $100 a year, $200 a year, and they'll give you a credit card with like a $200 limit. And sometimes it's even a card that you have to pay in advance to use the credit card. But what it does, it gradually builds your Beacon score back up. Now, let me give you some pointers if you do decide to go banco and go back Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Because I'm not advising that for you. I'm not a financial planner. You have to do what you want to do. I'm just letting you know, if you do this, you make sure that you get rid of every single debt that you had since you were born, since the beginning of time. If you just think you owe the debt, you list it. It doesn't make any difference if you owe it or you don't owe it. If somebody thinks you owe the debt, you list it. You say, well, why would I do that? Well, here's why. Because if you don't list every single thing you owe, somebody may come back on you 3 or 4 years later and say, you owe us money, we want to get a collection from you, and you can't file bankruptcy again because it's already over with. You got 7 years of not doing that again. So my mother-in-law, she ended up, I told you the story before, she ended up going banco. And then what she did, she reaffirmed an RV loan that she had borrowed money from a friend on an RV that wasn't worth anything, and they were going to take the lady's RV away. So she reaffirmed the note on the RV for like $25,000. And of course they jacked the interest through the roof. And what ended up happening is that created a problem for her because she bankrupted a bunch of the other bills, but she still had this giant car, truck, you know, RV payment to make every month. And then she made some bad car deals, and it just got, she got way upside down in her used car that she was driving. She was like $15,000 upside down in her car. It was worth like $10,000 and she owed $25,000 on it. So here's the other thing. If you have a car, now guys, I'm giving you some really good advice that you're not going to get anywhere else right now. I'm telling you this right now. If you have a car that you're upside down and you're going to have to go bankruptcy, get rid of the car. Don't reaffirm that debt. Get rid of it. Now, if you have a car, let's say you have a Honda Civic, and let's say it's worth $15,000 and you owe, you know, $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 on it, reaffirm that debt. Keep the car. Just keep it, because they won't take it away from you because you reaffirmed the debt. You can try to keep credit cards that you don't have any debt on, but once they find out that you went bankrupt, they're going to take the card away from you. They're going to either lower the limit down to hardly anything, or they're going to take the card or cancel it. I just thought I'd mention that to you, too. Even if they tell you they're not going to, they will. So it's better to bankrupt every single credit card, every single payment that you have. If you have a home that, let's say, you paid $300,000 for it, the economy dumps out on it, and the house is worth $150,000, bankrupt the house. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. Why are you going to make those giant, impossible-to-pay payments on a product that doesn't have any equity in it? That's very important you understand that. I had another friend of mine. I knew him years ago. This is back when the financial crisis hit in 2006, 2007, 2008. And he had this lifestyle. He was making $150,000 a year. He got let go from his job because he wasn't performing. And he had this giant house payment that was $8,000 a month. I kid. Austin knows exactly who I'm talking about. $8,000 a month car payment. He had a brand new Lexus, a brand new Infiniti. His Lexus payments were $1,000 a month. His Infiniti payments were $1,000 a month. He had $10,000 because he was literally spending every single penny he made every single year on just installment debt, buying things he didn't need to impress people he didn't know with money he didn't have that he borrowed. And what ended up happening is, I pleaded with him. I pleaded with him for a year. He kept reaffirming the debt, didn't want to file banco. Finally, he realized, he looked at the numbers and he crunched them and he said, hey, I'm not doing this. Ted, you're right. And I said, no, I am. If it's going to take you 15, 20, 30 years to dig out of a debt trap that you've gotten yourself into, do what the Bible says to do in the Old Testament. Just punch out. You got every 7 years to do it. Now, George Bush made it much more difficult to do it. You have to work with an attorney now. But whatever you do, you don't want to do Chapter 11 if you don't have to, because you don't want to reaffirm the debt or try to restructure. You don't want to do all that, because that still dumps out your Beacon score. You just want to dump the debt. Say, I'm out. I'm finished. I'm bankrupt. I'm insolvent. I'm done. And walk away from the creditors and the Rothschild bankers that did this to you. Now, secondly, if you decide to do all of that, don't allow yourself to fall into the same pit again when you get off the mess. In other words, don't start getting a bunch of credit cards. Don't start buying a bunch of things you don't need with money you don't have to impress people you don't know. Stop it. Just start paying cash for stuff. That's the easiest way to do it. Or if you use a credit card, pay it off every single month. Live within your discretionary income and don't go into debt with it. If you want a new couch, save up for the couch. Just save up for the couch. Just say, okay, I'm going to buy a new couch, and then don't go to a Thomasville Gallery and buy a couch that's going to be $4,000 or $5,000. You know, go to a wholesale club and buy a couch that's $400 or $500. You don't, because the couch, let me tell you something about couches and furniture. You buy a $5,000 couch and you try to sell it as a used piece of furniture, it's worth $50, $100. Now, Austin, you know I'm right. It's worth $100.
Oh, yeah.
It's all it's worth. So it doesn't matter. Oh, I paid $5,000 for this couch. Well, I'll give you $50. I paid $5,000. I'll give you $50. That's it. And that's what happens with used furniture. Okay. It doesn't make any difference if they tell you, oh, the Thomasville holds its value, the Henrodon holds its value, or the Drexel holds its. No, it doesn't. None of it holds its value. What holds its value, if you buy something 100 years old and it's an antique, then it may hold its value a little bit better, because an antique, you know, armoire, you may buy it for $1,500 and it may be worth $1,500 if you ever want to sell it. You get a brand new armoire, it may be $5,000 and you try to go sell it, it's not an antique, it's worth $250, $300. That's it. So furniture is not an investment. Okay. Don't let them lie to you about that. It's not. If you're going to buy nice stuff, plan on keeping it the rest of your life. Then it's okay. Then it's no big deal. But don't allow yourself to do this. Now, one more little trick that I want to teach you guys this. And I've had people do this with me before too. If you have a car, let's say for instance you're way upside down in the car, and you're gonna think this sounds kind of shady, but not being shady, I'm just being honest with you guys. If you know you're gonna get rid of the car and you need a vehicle, but you haven't filed bankruptcy yet, if you can get up, come down with a down payment on a car like a Honda Civic. Now, the reason I keep using Honda, Hondas and Toyotas really hold their values. I personally think Honda's better than Toyota, but Toyota's also very, very good. But Hondas and Toyotas are the two best brand makes that really hold your value from your car. In other words, you can literally drive a Honda Civic every year for about $250 a month in equity loss, about $3,000 a year, and get a brand new one every single year and never, ever change the oil in it if you don't put more than 10,000 miles on it. You just swap it out. So it's costing $200 a month to basically own the car. Now, that's not leasing it. That's owning it. You don't want to lease a Honda or a Toyota, and here's why. They have too high of retaining value. In other words, if you get a lease on a Toyota, let's stay with Honda. You get a lease on a Honda Accord, and you get a 3-year lease on it, and you're paying $450 a month, and you pay $20,000 for the car, and then you end up paying, you know, $400 a month times that's $4,000 or $5,000. You got $15,000 in payments on this car in 3 years. The car is still worth $12,000 or $13,000. Why would you do that? You've given them all that extra cash. It's better to buy a Honda new. If you could get one of the low ones, you should be able to buy a brand new Accord, brand new one, for about $19,000 to $19,500. And that those cars hold their value like steel when you do that. So if you have the ability to go out and buy a car that you're not going to be upside down in, and even if you've got to borrow the money from your parents or whatever for the down payment, go ahead and do that and get you the other car before you file bankruptcy. Because once you file bankruptcy, the game's over. Nobody's loaning you nothing. Okay? You're not going to get a new car loan. It's just over with. But as long as you, so if you buy a new Honda Accord or a new Civic before you punch out, then and get your payments out as low as you possibly can, put the biggest down payment you can in, then what ends up happening is you have that car and you can reaffirm that debt and you already have equity in that car, and now you have a good mode of transportation before, you know, and instead of having to drive around some sled that you paid $500 for, okay? So think through all of this stuff before you do it. And then gradually work your way back up with your Beacon score. Don't do what you did to go to where you were, okay? Don't allow that to happen. If you can afford a $2,000 house payment, don't get a $3,000 house payment. I mean, to me, that sounds so insane from being old school from the 60s and the 50s. I cannot believe how much house payments run up to now. It's nuts because everything's gotten so expensive because of the loss of value of our dollar. That's what causes. Again, the Rothschilds did this. So think through all of this stuff. But if you actually put it on paper and pencil and you look, I'm not going to charge anything on these 20 credit cards again. I owe $100,000 on these 20 credit cards. That's what you got to think, all right? The payments of this, I owe $100,000, I'm paying 18%. That's $1,500 a month in interest that I'm paying. The minimum payments on these 20 credit cards are about $2,000 a month. So I'm paying $500 a month in interest, I mean, in principal, on $100,000. How long will it take you at $100,000? It's going to take you 200 months. 200 months, okay? That's like 15, 17 years to pay back the debt. And that's if you don't buy anything else. And that means every single penny you make extra, you got to pour into those credit cards. So the numbers don't crunch. So if you get yourself into a situation like that, just do what the word says, do what the Bible says, and punch out. You say, well, it's not ethical. No, I didn't say you should do it. I'm saying that if you're in a mess where you should do it, I'm not talking about every 7 years run your doggone debt up and then punch out. I'm not, because there are people that do that. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is going in, if you get in self trouble, you lose a job, spouse loses a job, you made some bad mistakes, somebody gets into trouble medically, don't sit there and allow yourself to go into indentured servitude for the next 20 years. Let's say you're 65 years old. Let's say you're 60 years old. Make it easy. You're 60 years old. You lost your job. You're in debt. Blah, blah, blah. Got all these credit card bills. $150,000, $200,000 in credit card bills. How do you plan on paying that off before you're dead? What are you going to pay? Let's say you have $200,000 in debt. It's going to take you 35 years. What are you going to be living until you're 95, working every day, trying to pay credit card debt? You got to think through it logically. Just punch and be done with it and say, man, I screwed up. Got to start over. That's what it's for. That's why the Word of God allows that. And that's one of the reasons it was in our Constitution, Austin, because it was a biblical principle that was in the Word. So, I don't talk about this stuff very often, this financial planning stuff. And again, I'm not giving you any advice. What I'm saying is this. Think through the situation that you're in. Look at the real numbers. Don't plan on having some magical raise in 5 or 6 years or 10 years or 2 years that's going to start paying all of your bills off. It's probably not going to happen, all right? So don't allow yourself to think that I can go ahead and just keep doing this for the next 25 or 30 years or whatever and pay this off. Because you're going to be living in, you're going to be living in complete debt and in bondage for that whole length of time. That's not God's best for you. Anything you want to add to that, Austin?
No, that was some really good info. That really was. And this is something that I think a lot of people need to look into more. And this is sadly, this isn't something that a lot of people teach, and a lot of people aren't trained, and a lot of people don't pass down. This is stuff that Dad taught me over years and years. And, you know, I got a school hard knocks lesson when I was 18 when I financed that motorcycle. And luckily, I had learned what to do and how to handle it appropriately before I got incredibly deep in that hole. But you're exactly right, and I've seen this with numerous people that I know, especially you start throwing on the student loans, because you can't bankrupt student loans. So be very, very cautious and warn your children of this, because a lot of kids aren't taught this, and this is one of the reasons why we have over $1 trillion in student debt now in the United States, because we have this younger generation that thinks they're entitled to everything, and they're stupid. You're stupid when you're 18, 19 years old. You really don't have a lot of concrete, rational thought. Just put it out there bluntly. And you think, oh, well, it's fine. I'll run up $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in student loans. It's fine. When I get out of job, when I get out of college with my degree in gender studies, people are going to be clamoring to give me a job for $100,000, $150,000 a year, and I'll just be able to pay off my student loan the first year I get out of college. Little than they know, when they get out of college, the best job they're possibly going to find is working at probably, you know, a retail store or something on the side, because nobody's going to hire them with a degree for any meaningful job with gender studies or anything ridiculous like that, as I talked about yesterday. And so then they get in this position where they have $200, $300, $400, $500 a month student loan payments that go on essentially in perpetuity. I mean, they go on, they're like a mortgage debt. They go on 10, 20, 30 years sometimes, depending on how big they are, and you can't bankrupt them. That is one of the biggest atrocities in the United States right now that nobody is talking about. That we have, I think it's up to like $1.2, $1.3 trillion, that is with a T, $1 trillion of student debt, and it has been made now that you cannot bankrupt that debt. And a lot of these kids don't realize the ramifications and the consequences of that debt until they start getting in their mid-20s and they get out of college and they get a family and they get a house and they get a car and they get a spouse and they have kids, and they start realizing, wow, there's a lot extra I could do with this $300, $400, $500 a month that I'm paying in college loans for the next 20, 30 years. I mean, I know people that are in their 40s and 50s that are still paying for their college debt. I personally know them. And you sit there and go, no, that can't be. Oh, yeah, it can't be. Especially if you start going to these private schools, you start running up $200,000-$300,000 in student loans over a course of, you know, 4 to 8 years. It happens real quick. And so these are things that everybody needs to start looking at, because the financial aspect of where we're at in the United States is not by accident. These things have been done intentionally to enslave us on a large scale, and they've been done very effectively and very efficiently, and so many of these things can be at least avoided for the most part. Some things, you know, you have to buy a house at some point in your life. You really do, unless, you know, you want to, I don't know, live on a park bench or live in your parents' basement. At some point in time, you're going to have to build a house, you're going to have to buy a house. But the key is making sure, like Dad said, you stay within your means and being able to afford it. You don't go berserk with it. And then also, too, once you get that house, see, the thing is that a lot of people make the mistake of, and people always think of, what is the best payment I can afford? So, okay, I can afford my maximum of a $350 a month car payment. Why do you need to not go over $350? No, you don't want to do that. You want to go under that as much as possible, and then when you get the vehicle, you make extra payments on it. When I finance things in my life, especially in currently since I've been married, I've never made a minimum payment on anything. Nothing. Nothing's ever had a minimum payment on. Not once. I try to pay things off usually within half or less of the time that I finance them for. Why? A, that gives you the positive equity in the vehicle. B, that always makes sure at any given time, because of that positive equity, if you have to ditch that item, you have to fire sale it, finances go to crap, you have to get out from underneath it, you owe, you know, $10,000 on it, you paid $20,000 for it, but it's still worth $15,000 on it. Bam, you sell it for 10, you walk away with 5, you dump your payments, and you're gone. This is something that a lot of people make a mistake on, especially with vehicles and toys and all types of other things that they finance, because they don't factor in actually trying to pay down more principal. They just go, my maximum payment I can afford is $350 a month. I'm going to run it up as far as that. If it's $350 a month, that's all I'm paying every month. And that's why I know so many people that are $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 upside down in vehicles. And the problem is you can't ever get out from underneath it if you don't do anything other than minimum payments. So if you can afford $350, try to shoot for $200 or $250. And then when you get it, make $350 payments on it. That way you're paying an extra $1,200 a year on principal every single month that you're knocking down. So after 2 or 3 years, you've already paid an extra $3,000-$4,000 extra on top of your regular payments, and you have that positive equity. So A, if you want to sell it or get rid of it or trade it in, you have that positive aspect. B, if finances go bad and you need to dump it or you need to sell it, you have that ability to do so. So really good info, Dad, that you put out there on that. So I'm glad you brought that up today, because that's something that really a lot of people I really don't think talk about enough, especially in the alternative market, as alternative radio.
Well,
they never
talk about it, Austin. I mean, yeah, gosh, I mean, you know, I taught this stuff. I was a college professor for years. I mean, I understand how you have to look at the numbers. You've got to find out how they crunch. And one thing Austin said, he's absolutely right about toys. Dude, Scott, girls, listen to me right now. Don't finance toys, okay? If it floats or if it flies and you want to buy it, you need to lease it for a day. Just forget it. I mean, rent it for the day. I mean, just don't do it. Don't be putting yourself out there and allow yourself to, you know, get a boat that you're going to use for a whole bunch the first year or 2 years, and you got this payment forever. Don't do that. Buy a used boat. They have no resale value unless they're like a Schemoptik or a Mastercraft. They don't have any value. You get an off-brand boat, Bobo boat, I'd call them, and buy a Bobo boat. You know, it may cost $50,000-$60,000 new now. It's ridiculous. You buy it for $8,000 or $10,000 in good shape. And then if you want to use it for a year, you just pay cash for the boat and then turn around and sell it for the $8,000 or $10,000. It's like, I've got a friend of mine. I've got these friends that have these jets. I don't own a jet. I don't own a plane. Have no interest in it. They're too expensive. I just thought I'd mention that to you. And it's just easier to fly for free with American Airlines with the airline points. But the reality is this. I know that a lot of people go out there and they buy these planes. I've got friends who buy jets. And jets are one of the worst investments you're ever going to make. They're unbelievably expensive. I've got all these guys who own these planes, and all they do is bellyache about how much they cost to maintain. I mean, and quite frankly, here's the thing. If you're taking 10 or 12 people with you every time you go somewhere in a private plane, it's kind of cool. But if you're flying by yourself or with your wife, it's a complete and total waste of money to do that, especially if you own the thing. It's $4,000 or $5,000 a month just in maintenance and hangar fees. So it's not worth it. You think, well, I don't care about jets. Well, yeah, I know, but I'm letting you know you don't do that. If it flies or floats, just rent it for the day and be done with it. And, guys, it's really important, too, that you understand that you don't have to try to get everything when you're young. I'm going to mention that. I'm going to say that to you right now. If your parents are 50, 60, 70 years old and they're wealthy, or your grandparents are wealthy, it took them a long time to get to where they are. It took a long time with a lot of savings, a lot of hard work, and a lot of, you know, planning. Don't think that you're going to be there when you're 21 years old or 22 years old. That's one of the biggest things, Austin, they don't teach in college. And these kids get out with these student loans. And this, and like you said, they get this degree in gender studies. They go to Harvard. They get it. They have to pay, you know, $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 for this stupid degree. And unless they basically get on the speaking circuit and go all the way to a PhD in gender studies, and then they get hired by a bunch of liberal organizations. I talked to this lady just the other day, and she has a PhD in sociology. I mean, completely useless degree, except she's on the speaking circuit. And she speaks at all these liberal events because she's a PhD in sociology. Now you think, well, how much does she make? Well, she probably gets, you know, $1,000 a speech or $2,000 a speech. But still, guys, it's a completely and totally useless degree. It has absolutely no worthwhile value unless you're a college professor or you're speaking with it. So, and the guys, all, I was on the speaking circuit for years. I mean, for years. And, you know, and the thing about it is that that's a life too that you get really burned out on because of the simple reasoning of being on an airplane or in a suitcase all the time. It's not worth it. Okay, now let's do a different topic. the 25 reasons I'm not a Democrat. I pulled this article up today. It's from the PJ Media. I loved it. It's by John Hawkins. I'm gonna have to change some of it because it's kind of crude. Because he's number one. Jesus, America, and capitalism have been the three greatest forces of good in world history. I'll amen him on that. Number two, an attractive, this is gonna be funny, guys. Now, forgive me for saying it, I'm gonna be part of this. An attractive woman posing with an AR-15 assault rifle beats a screaming feminist, incredibly ugly woman wearing a vagina hat 10 out of 10 times. I'm sorry, I had to say that, okay? Number three, you can't believe all women or believe all men. You have to believe the evidence. That's good. It's wrong and disgusting to harass people in restaurants and at their home just because you disagree with them politically. Also, if you block traffic to get attention for your cause, whatever it may be, I'm not on your side. Number five, immigration is only good for America under certain conditions. The number of people coming in every year needs to be controlled and reasonable. Immigrants should be able to support themselves without getting on the dole, and we should heavily emphasize assimilation. Number six, you should laugh at the idea of white guilt. Okay, I'm laughing. People should not feel guilty because they're white or because of their race or their sex or something their ancestors did. This is what they're still doing in Germany. They're trying to make the people now that are like four generations removed from Nazis but responsible for the World War II. It's destroyed Germany. It really has as far as the reproductive rates. Number seven, Obamacare has driven health care costs through the roof, made premiums much higher, and hurt the vast majority of middle-class Americans. That's a fact. Number eight, looting. Looting is wrong. It's funny you have to say this. This isn't awesome. Stealing from someone because they have been disadvantaged from a storm or a hurricane or a fire is wrong, period. 100% of the time, unless there's a zombie apocalypse. If there's a zombie apocalypse happening right now, then you can get away with looting. That's okay. But otherwise, you're a scum if you loot. Number nine, there are two genders, male and female. You can't change who you were born with and what you are, no matter how many surgeries, hormones, or weird pronouns that you apply to yourself. Also, those genders should use different bathrooms. You shouldn't be competing against each other in athletic endeavors. I just saw it the other day. These girls are having to compete against guys now who are saying they're girls and winning first place ribbons and trophies, you know, and saying that they're entering as a transgender female. They're all muscled up. You can tell they've been taking steroids. And on top of everything else, they've got testicles producing steroids the girls can't compete against. It's nonsense. Number 10, climate change. The Democrats are using climate change as their mantra. I'm adding this. We need to realize that the climate change is being caused by the chemtrails and from the methane gas release. And it's not something that because human beings are breathing that's causing climate change. Number 11, asking people to show a government ID when they vote is just common sense if you really care about election fraud. I agree. 12, America is not a racist country and probably the best place on earth to live if you're in a minority. That's true. I believe that. Number 13, refusing to stand for the flag is unpatriotic, disrespectful, and harms any cause associated with. 100% agreement. Number 14, wearing a black mask, carrying a steel pipe, wearing a helmet, looking like you're a bunch of Nazis, marching goose step down the highway, committing vandalism, and jumping people 5-on-1 is basically for cowards, losers, fascists, and criminals. Agreed. Number 15, we need to have borders. I believe we need to enforce these borders, preferably with a wall. The reason we have to have a wall because everybody wants to come here because their countries are some hellhole they live in. I can't really blame them for that, but we have to get assimilation efficiently. I believe people who cross the borders illegally are criminals, who at minimum deserve to be deported and taken back to their countries. I agree with that. 16, people should be judged individually on their own merits, not because of their race, color, or sexual orientation. 17, we don't need to protect people from dangerous ideas. Instead, we need to make a case for why the ideas are dangerous and provide a better alternative. I like that. Number 18, there are no oppressed Americans. I don't care what color you are. You're not oppressed here. I don't care what race you are. You're not oppressed here. I don't care what gender you are. You're not oppressed here, period. Number 19, taking guns out of the hands of law-abiding gun owners makes us less safe, and putting more guns in the hands of responsible Americans make us safer. Amen to that. Appropriating the best parts of other cultures is a good idea. I agree with that, but it has to be done in it has to be done gradually. It shouldn't be done all at once to change your own cultural values. Number 21, Hillary Clinton turned out to be the worst presidential candidate of all time, and Barack Obama was the worst American president of all time, although Lyndon Johnson and Jimmy Carter were nearly as mediocre. Now, he is forgetting Woodrow Wilson. He is forgetting Franklin and Delano Roosevelt and how awful they were. Personally, my automatic worst presidents of all time would be number one, it would be Woodrow Wilson. Number two, it would be, hate to say it, guys, it would be Abraham Lincoln. Number three, it would be Lyndon Johnson. Number four, it would be, well, no, I actually have to put the FDR before Lyndon Johnson. Then it would be Lyndon Johnson. Then it would be Jimmy Carter. And then it would be Barack Obama. Because Barack Obama was just a hack. He was just a do-boys all he was. 22, slavery is the second greatest evil committed by America as a nation behind abortion. Again, that was 400 years ago. I'm not putting that on the people in America right now. I'm not doing it. I don't like it. It was horrible, but it was 400 years ago. Number 23, there's no such thing as a patriarchy. In fact, this is probably the least patriarchal time in all of American history. Now, I'm going to stop for a second, okay? Patriarchy, we're talking about, in the Old Testament, we call them the patriarchs, Abraham, Moses, Isaac, Jacob, the people who are the founders of the country. I believe that we need to have a patriarchy in the United States, but I also believe that women who are involved in politics should be part of the matriarchy of this country. I believe that we have both men and women who have basically done great things for the United States of America, and they need to be held in high esteem. And if you want to call it a patriarchy or a matriarchy, I believe we need to remember our past, remember these heroes of the past. Number 24, the South is a great place to live with, just as wonderful, any wonderful people as anywhere else in the world, if not more. Then he says something I'm not going to repeat. Number 25, liberal, socialism, communism, fascism, and Nazism are all branches of the same rotten tree and lead to roughly similar bloody totalitarian outcomes if given enough time and power. I agree with that. We need to be living under a republic. We need to live under a constitutional republic like we had in this country at one time before the oligarchy rule began. And we need to restore the Constitution of the United States back to the full-blown republic that we had in the beginning. I thought I'd read those today. It took a little bit of time to do that, Austin, but I want to cover those. And I changed some of the stuff he said because I didn't agree with it, but I thought overall it was a very, very good article, and I highly recommend that you read it. What do you think, son?
That was funny. There was definitely some funny stuff in there, no doubt. Also, too, in other news, I saw this article last night, and I found it quite puzzling, but it reminded me, well, I'll tell you guys in a minute, because this is pretty weird. There's videos of it online. You can look at it. The security force of the future is already patrolling several neighborhoods in New York now. The robot protectors can see what you're doing and talk back to you. The machines created by a New Yorker, however, have created serious privacy concerns. One of the models named Rosie is a robot that uses the same technology as a self-driving car to police and patrol the sidewalks of the city near Queens. They said it's a crazy combination of artificial intelligence, self-driving autonomous technology, robotics, and analytics. Lee's company has already built 3 robot models in the United States. Well, one thing positive about it, he's built everything here in-house in the United States. He hasn't subbed it out to China and then brought it back in. So, positive aspect, he's making it here in the United States. That's about the end of the positivity on it. Listen to this. This is really where it gets weird. Each robot has 5 cameras, 4 of which help the robot see everything. The other is a FLIR thermal imaging data camera. All of the information gathered goes to an internet-based portal that helps local security forces on the ground. The robots are able to observe people walking on the sidewalks, record license plate numbers, detect the heat in objects, and see which cell phone serial numbers are within the designated patrolling area. Nightscope said the data is secure and is only seen by the security agency controlling the robot. They're able to stop it and tell it what to look for. They say, however, it does not have a joystick that would allow you to use it to follow or target a specific person. The company said it will only cost between $6 to $12 an hour for a new robot to hit the streets. They're currently deployed in 16 states now to come alongside local security teams to help reduce crime. Allegedly. This thing's pretty crazy. When I first saw it, I thought of the entry aspect of what it's going to turn into, because now, you know, it's not armed yet. It doesn't have tasers on it. It doesn't have less lethal. It doesn't even have lethal on it. But it does have five cameras, including FLIR, heat signature, thermal imaging, which I find to be very interesting. Because, as you guys know, everybody puts off a different heat signature, a different frequency. So this thing is going to be viewing everything in thermal imaging, which is going to be able to basically monitor and identify individual people. They didn't say whether or not this has full-blown facial recognition software in it, which I'm assuming if it does not, it will very soon. That way it could run full facial recognition scanning of everybody that it basically crosses paths with, and then it can monitor them that way as well on a regular basis. But this is the way they're going with the future, guys. This is what they're starting to do with the robotics and the AI. It reminded me of the first movie, RoboCop 1, the original one, not the weird one that came out recently, I think it was Samuel L. Jackson or whatever, the original one with the kind of shady special effects, and they bring in this, they're in this boardroom meeting, if you guys have ever seen it, it's like almost a funny scene, but it's not really funny, and this big robot walks in, and it's a policing, patrolling, boots on the ground, patrolling robot, and he walks in, and he's all armored up, complete AI, no human aspect to it whatsoever. And they tell one of the board members to say, hey, pick up this gun and point it at him, and he's basically going to tell you to drop it. And so the guy points it at him, and he tells him, the robot says, you know, you need to drop your weapon now. The guy drops the gun. They think it's kind of a joke. Then the robot doesn't turn off. It says, you need to drop your weapon now, or I'm going to engage you with deadly force. Then the guy goes, I don't have a gun. Stop it. They can't get it shut off. The robot ends up lighting this guy up, shoots him like 50 times in the middle of a boardroom. Quite an interesting scene. And, of course, they eventually hard shut the whole thing down and turn it off. And it reminds me kind of where this is going to start going, because, as you guys know, it's just a matter of time before they start arming these things. That's a simple fact. It may not be with lethal, but it will be with less lethal at some point. They'll put taser deployment on it. They'll put CS gas deployment. They'll put less lethal ammunition like beanbag rounds or pellet rounds on it. At some point in time, that's where the next aspect of where patrolling robots are going to go, not to mention the whole aspect of facial recognition software they're going to use on the five different cameras that it's computed with, so they can monitor everything around it all the time. But the video, you see this thing, it's literally scanning down the sidewalk, little robot, it looks just like the one off Star Wars, a little round robo one that's running around, and this is where it's going. But I saw that video today, Dad, and now, so on U.S. soil, we now have active patrolling police robots running around engaging with people now on a regular basis. I found that to be creepy and also interesting at the same time.
Well, it looks like R2-D2 was a cute little happy robot.
Yes, that's the point.
It doesn't look like the Terminator robot. Because they want to make you realize how it's a happy little robot. It's going to make you happy. Oh, look how cute he is. Look how pretty he is. Oh, he's such a cute little robot. Oh, look, he talks and he wiggles. Oh, he's so cute. That's how they're going to do it. And all of a sudden, you know, next generation doesn't look quite as cute, but he's not too bad. By about the 10th generation, they're like, this thing looks like some kind of cyborg off Terminator. It looks like we got Cyberdyne running the planet. Now, what the heck is this thing? So what they do. So gradually, DARPA brings more and more of this technology out to allow them to do more and more stuff that we don't want them to do and enslave more and more people. Crazy stuff I've ever seen. By the way, as Alzheimer's drugs continue to fail, they really don't work, by the way, researchers are researching for the reasons of why coconut oil works so well with Alzheimer's patients. Again, they want to be able to patent it. Remember, it wasn't used before 94. A group of New York City's Mount Sinai Medical School researchers set out to analyze why and how coconut oil affects Alzheimer's disease patients favorably. They acknowledged some efficacy from coconut oil, and they wanted to know more. Since most drug trials to develop an Alzheimer's drug have failed miserably, the motivation to study coconut oil in order to understand how it possibly affects Alzheimer's disease was probably motivated by a desire to patent, here we go, a new drug that could work similar to coconut oil. Natural food cannot be patented. The research was based on earlier animal studies of virgin coconut oil's effect on mouse models of coconut oil, as well as other in vitro lab culture studies. The research also acknowledged the existence of many anecdotal testimonies, which means not double-blind clinical research studies of Alzheimer's disease patients. Now, what that means is this. If they go into a research study and they have, let's say they have 50 Alzheimer's patients, and 25 of them get coconut oil and 25 of them get a placebo or a sugar pill or water or whatever. They want to see what the difference is going to be between these 25 who get the drug and 25 who don't. And then what happens is the person who's administrating the coconut oil or the water doesn't know which is which. He doesn't know. It's called a double-blind clinical study, which means the researcher nor the participants, neither one of them know who's getting the real stuff. Okay, that's considered real empirical research in medicine or in science, and it needs to be duplicatable. In other words, if somebody does it, they need to be able to repeat it over and over and over again to prove that this is a true experiment. Now, here's anecdotal. Let's say I had a clinic still, and I had 1,000 patients come into my office, and let's say, you know, 500 of them had Alzheimer's disease, and all of them start taking these, the MCT oil or whatever we're using for the coconut oil, and they and 395 of them had unbelievable results, and they got over the Alzheimer's disease. They were completely and totally the way they were before they developed amyloid plaques inside of their brain and Alzheimer's disease. That's not considered research. Now think for me, for the thing. See, that's anecdotal research, because that's something that's being observed, but it's not considered real. Now, this is the exact same problem that you have right now with autism. Let's say we have a medical doctor who basically gives a child a shot, or a pediatrician, and they find out that out of the, you know, that one out of 30 of their children, after they get immunized, become autistic. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is awful. But it has nothing to do with it, because there's no double-blind clinical research studies that are proving that this does it. Now, why isn't that being done? Why? Here's why. They can't go in and do double-blind clinical research studies on people trying to cause disease, because it's not considered medically ethical. It's like saying, I'm going to try to cause you to come down with brain cancer so we can try to cure it. That's stupid to even say that. Same thing with Alzheimer's disease, same thing with autism. They can't say, I want to try to create autism in these children, so they don't want to set up a model that's going to do that. Now, it'd be easy enough to do. They could take 1,000 children, which, by the way, this is what they did with the CDC and the studies that were suppressed and lied about when Thompson came out and talked about them. They came out and they ran these models of children who did and did not receive immunizations, and they found out the immunizations were causing a much higher incidence of autism in black boys, much higher. And they were told to bury the information. They actually had a burning party in which they took the doggone data and they burned it in garbage cans inside of the office. How they didn't set off smoke detectors, I don't know. Maybe they were down in the parking garage, I don't know. But the reality is they were told to suppress the data that autism was definitely caused by immunizations. They did the research. They know it does it, but they covered it up. See, this is the stuff that makes me angry, Austin, is when we know that something like coconut oil may help a person with Alzheimer's disease, and they don't want people to know about coconut oil. This is crazy. And I could read you the whole thing. It says, in humans, mutations of the amyloid precursor protein gene has been implicated in increased plaque formation. Our data suggests that this coconut oil may contribute to the expression and secretion of this destruction of this plaque thing. The results suggest that coconut oil decreases the intracellular ARF1 expression, thereby resulting in an inhibition of amyloid secretion. In other words, it stops Alzheimer's disease. Now, that's just something I would mention to you. I'm not making that claim. I'm just saying what these guys are doing. University of Texas PhD candidate Blevins stated, these findings support growing evidence that plaques and tangles might not be a direct cause of Alzheimer's disease. A lot of money was spent on getting rid of plaques, but it didn't help. It actually made the patients quite sick. Then Rudolf Tanzi, PhD professor of neurology at Harvard, says this, as I've said for years, but pharmaceutical companies don't seem to listen, treating beta amyloid in patients who already have clinical symptoms of Alzheimer's is too late. Once dementia begins, the brain must be saved by stopping neuroinflammation. So, guys, this is the kind of stuff that we want to talk about on this show, and we want to realize that there's all kinds of natural things that you can do to avoid different diseases. But you got to eat right. You got to eat clean. If you decide not to do that, then you're going to have all this massive, massive amount of inflammation in the brain and every other part of the body. Remember, they're linking inflammation to Alzheimer's patients. They're linking inflammation to heart disease patients. They're linking inflammation with stress and chronic anxiety and all these different things to depression and all kinds of other diseases and all kinds of other symptoms. So the whole thing is this. I wrote an article on this. It said, are you inflamed? You can look it up on my article, on my website and read it. There's all kinds of natural things, including turmeric, that helps to lower inflammation in the brain. And of course, I take the MCT coconut oil every single day. It's a great, great product. I think it's absolutely amazing. And it also helps to burn belly fat, like putting butter in a microwave. By the way, the developer of GMO potatoes now is renouncing his own work, and he warns against consuming the GMO potatoes. He's saying they're linked to health risks. Now, think about that for a second. I mean, why in the world do we have to have GMO potatoes? You know, potatoes have been around for a really long time, Austin. We never had to change potatoes. Now, number one, potatoes aren't really a healthy food to eat anyhow. In moderation, they're okay. I mean, I really like Sharon's mashed potatoes, you know, especially when she uses the butter and all the other stuff in them. I mean, they're absolutely delicious. But the reality is they're a nightshade variety of vegetable, and they cause inflammation. And if you have them for Thanksgiving or for Christmas or whatever every once in a while, they're okay. But don't be eating potatoes or eggplant or bell pepper or tomatoes every single day, especially if you have inflammation in your body, especially if you have rheumatoid arthritis, because it'll really inflame the joints of rheumatoid arthritic. I've got a friend of mine up here, North Carolina. His body's riddled with arthritis, eats big pile of potatoes every single day, every day. And I told him, I said, dude, why don't you stop eating the potatoes? I don't want to. I like potatoes. Well, then I find out he also had a bypass surgery for his gut because he weighed, you know, like 200 pounds more than he does now, and he couldn't control his eating, and so he basically, he's had all these health problems. He said, you know, he's had problems with his pancreas. He's already had his, you know, all these different organs he's had taken out or trimmed out. It's crazy. All because of the discipline required to eat the right foods. Guys, it's easy to stay healthy. It really is. It's simple, but it takes discipline. You got to be careful. My oldest daughter, I was talking to her the other day. She was trying to lose 20 pounds, been trying to lose 20 pounds for like whatever. She was in private school for a few years out in Montana, gained some weight. And I told her, I said, don't give me excuses as to why you're 20 pounds overweight. I said, it's just because you've chosen to keep the 20 pounds. I said, you know, all it is a question of calorie in versus calorie out, or exercise. I said, and exercise. I said, now remember though, you can't burn all the calories you eat via exercise unless you exercise all the time. And then if you stop exercising all the time, you're going to gain weight like crazy. It's just better not to eat the extra foods, not to snack, not to eat chips, not to eat candy, not to eat junk. And finally she admitted, she said, Dad, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I said, I know. I said, when we all decide that we want to lose the weight and be at our ideal body weight or maintain our health, that's when we make the choices that we need to. And again, guys, thanks for supporting healthmasters.com. Thanks for putting up with that show yesterday. I'm sorry to bring that up again, Austin. Thanks for being here today. This is the way our shows normally go. You guys know that. I love you guys. I really, really do, and I appreciate you. And you guys are just awesome. And I just wanted to let you know that I've had the opportunity and the privilege to pray for you again yesterday. Thanks for getting your multiple vitamins from Health Masters. We make the finest, highest quality supplements in the world. I believe that with all of my heart. Everything we make is basically tested for heavy metals before we even use the raw materials. We have a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility that manufactures our stuff. And guys, if I could make a better product, I would make it, because I personally take these products and so do my wife and my kids. I love you. I appreciate you. God bless you. Also, do the write-up today. Make sure you include the information about the bankruptcy, you know, bankruptcy, yes or no, what are the choices, that kind of stuff in the write-up. Love you guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Austin, I appreciate you, bud. I'll talk to you in a bit.
Absolutely, bud. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of stuff that people have to understand as far as with the health aspect. There's so many different things, and that's what we have on our website at healthmasters.com. We have so many different articles you can search through. We have free videos on there. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletter. And, of course, we have the show that we do every day, but that's also on a variety of different topics, as you guys know. Also, other news I want to bring other days. I saw this. It was kind of troubling video. Apparently now, so far, this group has gotten huge. A caravan now of their estimating to be over 4,000 migrants from Honduras waving Honduras flags or marching towards the U.S.-Mexico border to demand mass entry into the United States. Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, which this is a video that kind of troubled me, he tweeted a disturbing video today showing women being handed fistfuls of cash to join the caravan that is storming the U.S. border just in time for the midterm elections. The person handing out the cash, if you hear in the video, specifically is asking for women and children, volunteers only, presumably so the caravan doesn't look as much like a mass invasion of military-age men and press photos as we have seen so many times before in the past. But in the video, you can see him. He's got a big old rack of cash. And, I mean, every woman and child, I mean, any kid that's walking, they're getting a bill, getting a bill, getting a bill. I mean, they're just handing them out like candy, and everybody's just getting in line to join this group that's continuing to grow. Ironically enough, it's not just by chance that this is happening, you know, 2 weeks before the midterm elections at all. Obviously, this is something that's being done on the back end from multiple angles, and it may be something that's going to make a lot of news in the press. It may be something that's not. We'll just have to follow it and see. But again, this is a point in time where, you know, the U.S. military is always used for any type of invasions, foreign or domestic. This is clearly a domestic invasion again, and I think the Border Patrol needs some type of help and support on the border. I've talked about this so many times, is that that's one of my biggest pet peeves, is that we don't fund Border Patrol like we should in the United States. We're willing to give the Pentagon close to $1 trillion now. You know, the military budget, what, pushed up to $760 billion this year for our military. Yet when the military gets out, a lot of these guys have a difficult time finding jobs, and the Border Patrol's heavily underfunded, heavily undergunned, and heavily underfunded as far as when it comes to machinery, equipment, and personnel. Yet you could bring these guys in that are retired military and put them in active Border Patrol theater down there, start them off at $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, which we could easily afford with the amount of money that we dump in the military, and siphon off, you know, say $1 billion extra for our homeland security at the border, and allow these guys and train them to protecting the border on a regular basis in the type of theater they're going to be involved in. Obviously, engaging in hostile direct forces in Afghanistan is going to be different than dealing with basically unarmed border crossers. But on the other hand, too, we do know that some of these guys, as we've seen in videos, are not unarmed. They are heavily armed when they do cross the border. A video surfaced about a month ago, if you guys saw that, about it was on a gang cam of a guy that had property in Texas, and there were people, about 15 migrants, that were all armed with AK-47s and AR-15 slung on their back with backpacks, and they had crossed the border, and I think they were stealing horses or something along the lines of that. So obviously these guys are not all there to just come across the border as women and children, as they're trying to perceive it in the media coverage that we saw. But the fact that they're giving them money also makes it a little bit more troubling to me, as it shows you that somebody is really trying to push this agenda that's going on down there. Interesting stuff. But of course, guys, if you need anything, please give us a call, 1-800-726-1834. I'm sure, as you guys realize, when the power went off yesterday, everything went down, generator went down, no phones were working, so everything kind of, you know, didn't go well. Of course, the website at any time, though, is handled on our servers off campus here, so they stay up 24/7, 365 at healthmasters.com. That's why our website, we try to keep it very hardened and very active all the time, so you guys can see exactly what is going on, and you can order at any point in time, even if our phone systems go down. We have a very, very strong independent server we work with that is not compromised for much of anything. Of course, if you guys want to check out the product of the week, the Excellent C won yesterday. I didn't even get to talk about that yet. Very popular product, which is very important for the immune system. It's buffered with minerals to actually help prevent potential stomach upset. It's 750 milligrams a capsule. I usually take anywhere from 1,500 to 3,000 milligrams per day is what I take of vitamin C. Vitamin C is also crucial in muscle repair. A lot of people don't realize that, but whenever you're taking a lot of exercise classes, or you're working out in the gym, or you're just very active, your body needs vitamin C, and it really helps out with collagen and really helps out with muscle repair. And, of course, be sure to vote for the other products of the week that are up there for right now. We have, like, the E, the beef jerky, the Bill Tong that we have our buddy from South Africa that makes for us. We also have the B Complex, which I'm looking right now, but the B Complex is winning pretty strong. So if you want anything else to win, be sure to vote on the product of the week on our website at healthmasters.com. Thank you guys. We love you. We appreciate you. We appreciate all the feedback and the order comments. That has been great lately. You guys have a blessed, safe, awesome night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.